We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hey, this is Chad. Just want to let you know before we get started with the podcast here today, it was a really fun one, but we did have a few audio issues here and there for whatever reason. And so stick with us if you do, because it ends up being really fun. But I don't think it's too bad, but just want to give you a heads up that there are some audio issues we'll try to fix for next time. But thank you all so much for listening. It's the joy of my life doing this podcast for you all every week. And thank you so much for being part of the family. Without further ado, it's me and Chris Garber. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 362 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining me again this week, your friend and mine, Chris Garber. How are you today, Chris?
That's me.
It is you, as a matter of fact. I'm betting...
Strangely good mood right now. I don't know why.
Well, good. This would make for a good podcast. I got to tell you, Chris, I'm betting big on you really bouncing back this episode and providing some good content for our viewers.
betting big. That's the motto of the Reds.
For those that don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Chad's cracking wise about an article Thursday evening. In the Cincinnati Enquirer by one Bobby Nightingale. That basically, I don't know if you start like a spring training preview, I guess, is kind of, but his angle is the Reds are making a big bet that their offense, which had the league's lowest batting average at .212 last season, will naturally improve to give them a chance to compete for a divisional title. So I was going to ask you if you thought Bobby Nightingale was like parroting the company line and kind of defending the team. But as I read that for the second time, I think there's no way. It's like, it's largely the same offense that went scoreless for 22 innings in the postseason.
So you think he believes that's a possibility? I mean, I guess it's a possibility, but.
Yeah, I think he's skeptical of the success. Okay. Big bet.
Well, good. That makes me feel better about Bobby Nightingale. When I read that, everybody here that's listening knows exactly what went through my mind as soon as I read that. That's their strategy on offense, is to hope that everybody plays better.
Naturally improving.
Naturally.
Naturally. Like, I wonder, that I just like to play with that word for a little bit. Like, okay, I don't think he's making a steroid dig there, but is he just saying, like, is that a synonym for magically?
Oh.
It's not like they're young, right? It's not like you expect, Nick Castellanos to naturally improve when he gets to be age 29 or whatever he is.
Yeah. Let's use magically instead. I think we both probably think that there's a decent chance that the offense has to be better. I mean, it was a short season, so, sample size issues and some of these guys did not play to what the back of their baseball card says. But my whole thing is just, let's not hope they play better. Let's make sure that we fill some holes and give ourselves the best chance of having a better offense instead of just betting big on Mike Moustakas being better.
As he says it, and that's the bet the Reds are gambling on. If the offense improves and the top players stay healthy, they'll be in the mix.
Oh, boy. Doesn't that just make your heart almost explode out of your chest with excitement for the season?
It's exciting. It's exciting. You know, I'd like to nominate Sonny Gray for, like, the Walt Jocketty quote award. You know, he's got a line in there. You still look at, as an offensive unit, we still have some extremely established players who have been so productive and so successful throughout their professional careers.
Did he say that they're gritty?
They're extremely established.
You got to have some establishment.
You want to have an extreme amount if you're really planning on a big bet season.
Oh gosh.
I wouldn't do any better if I was asked to give quotes for a living, but what are they going to say?
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, and it's not that we're saying that the Reds are definitely going to be, you know, the offense is definitely not going to be better. I think there's a reasonable chance they'll be somewhat better. But going into a season and deciding only to fill 7 of the 8 positions on the offense and just hoping that the team magically plays better, which they might, but that's still not a recipe for success, I don't think. So, oh, well. And actually, success, according to Nightingale's article, is not, you know, championship winners. And they might be in the mix.
Might be in the mix. If not, fourth place.
There you go. Speaking of quotes, and this was, I literally laughed out loud at this one. And it's one of those, like you just said, where, you know, what's he going to say? And we're talking about manager David Bell. And here's the quote this week. I feel great about the options that we have. I'm not ready today to name my starting shortstop by any means, but at the same time, we know who we have. We're familiar with our personnel and the options we have at the position. We feel great about that. They feel great that they're really familiar with their...
That's great.
I feel
great how familiar I am. I'm extremely... Well, these guys are extremely established. You're staggeringly familiar with them.
Established and familiar?
Isn't it? It's like a Mad Lib. It's like... hyperbolic adjective with mundane noun.
You know, I've always, every time I see one of these quotes, again, what's David Bell going to say? Some of these quotes we've had from Nick Kroll over the offseason, what's he going to say? He has a PR he has to engage in. But wouldn't you love David Bell to say what he's really thinking?
I don't know, guys. I don't know. I could get up here and tell you that these guys are tremendously present, but, you know, I think I'm just gonna say I don't know.
We've got a number of human adults who have positioned themselves between second and third base at some point in their careers.
Oh gosh,
I'd like him to get up there and say Castellini crapped out on us. He refused to even get us a shortstop. I don't have a starting shortstop. That's why I haven't named one. I don't have one on my roster. I would love for him to say that, but he can't.
Yeah, I think it's that's one of those things. Like, you know, if you're going to do that, you got to quit. You can't do that to your boss.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I still dream of the day when that happens.
You say you Sid Bream of the day.
Oh, potentially the first Sid Bream reference on this podcast in episode number 362. Fox Sports Ohio acquired a shortstop.
Yeah. And they cut loose a second baseman and a pitcher, I see, too.
Yeah. And I don't know, bullpen catcher named Jeff Pecoro.
Wide receiver.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. The Reds announced that Barry Larkin's going to serve as a TV analyst this week, and they say he's going to be in the rotation with Chris Welsh and Jeff Brantley. And I hope that doesn't reduce the number of opportunities we have to hear Chris Welsh on television, but sounds like Larkin's going to do the home games.
Yeah, like what kind of deal is that?
That's a pretty good...
Chris Welsh, you've got 20-some years of this team, almost 30 years with this team, and they're like, yeah, you're doing all the road trips.
Yeah.
And getting half... You're getting half the games. The good news is they're all the road trips.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's you know, getting half the games after, you know, doing all of them. That's the first smack in the face. But then, oh, yeah, also, you live here in Cincinnati, and you don't get any of the games that are here.
And why would that, like, and I don't even get why Larkin, I mean, he doesn't live there. Like, wouldn't
That's
he
true.
Rather do the games in Atlanta and Miami?
That's a good
closer
point.
Closer to his home in Orlando than schlep up to Cincinnati, you know, 13 times a year?
Maybe we're underestimating how much Barry Larkin likes to schlep up to Cincinnati.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe his family's still up here, and that's why he wants to do it.
Or, yeah.
And maybe there's part of the deal is like, I don't. He could do that on the road too, like working with the players and stuff. Is he still doing that deal?
He has been. I don't know if he still is this year. Presumably, I mean that's. I don't know.
I like to think of him like when Joe Nuxall used to put on uniform and throw a BP. I'd like to see Larkin. It wouldn't be quite as amusing.
That's true.
To see him in uniform as
that's true.
To see Nuxy.
Now, are you upset about the fact that Danny Graves and Doug Flynn are no longer evidently a part of the Reds broadcast team?
No.
I can't work up any sympathy. No, I mean, I don't want anybody to lose their job, but...
Yeah, I mean, I thought Graves was better this year than he was in the past.
I'll agree with that.
He just didn't do it for me. Like, I didn't care for his, like, his style wasn't my favorite, but he was much better. But Flynn's, by all accounts, a great guy, and I think that's why they just let him hang around and threw him some money. But he was not good at that job.
You know, I'll agree that Graves was better, but I still, on radio, he's not good. You know, I could see him being in the pregame, postgame show, you know, in the studio or whatever.
Yeah. It's just weird to me. It's a hard, hard job. And the thing about Chris Welsh is he has continued, I mean, to probably more than anybody I'm familiar with, to try to learn more and improve.
Oh, yeah.
His ability to call a game. And you get so many of these guys, even guys like Sam LaCure, who's like, 5 years younger than us, is on there talking about, by and large, you know, the kids these days kind of an approach to commentary. And I don't know. I think Larkin said a few things that I thought were pretty maybe optimistic that he's kind of going to be a pro baseball, pro player,
yeah,
commentator. Unlike a lot of guys who just bitch about their inability to bunt.
I just think Welsh is, and I hope maybe they're going to go with a three-man booth sometime or something. I don't know. I would hate to see his role reduced because I do believe, I mean, I've not watched every broadcasting from every team, but he's a guy that seriously cares about his craft and has really tried to remain open-minded because his role is to explain what's happened on the field. So he has to kind of stay engaged with the current state of the game. And, you know, it's not just RBIs and, you know, pitching wins with him. And he's really good at what he does, and not just because he's been on the podcast a few times.
I totally agree. And you know, I mean, take it beyond, like, all that. And then he's also made himself into an expert on the rules of baseball.
Yeah.
In a way, and he, you know, the thing with him is, like, he gets when to insert that stuff and when not to. And, you know, he doesn't intrude.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I don't know. I really think he does a good job. I even enjoyed last summer when he called some of those inter-squad games alone, Vin Scully style. Yeah, I was cool with that.
He's better with play-by-play than I realized, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the fella that's... That's coming to town now. What's his name?
Who's the fella that's coming to town?
New announcer.
They got a new announcer? I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, you know, the John Sadak.
Sadak, yeah.
Sajak.
John Sadak. And I was told that I did pronounce it correctly on last episode. So John Sadak, yeah, is going to be the TV play-by-play guy. And you know, he seems like a competent professional from the clips that I saw.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking forward to seeing if he and Welsh, because Welsh sometimes was kind of beating his head against the wall with Tom.
He wanted to beat Tom's head against the wall.
Well, that too, but...
Yeah, I think it's like addition by subtraction here.
Since we're talking about Larkin, can I give you a quick quiz? Pop quiz, hot shot.
Sure. Are you holding the phone in your opposite hand right now?
Yes. Barry Larkin made his debut for the Cincinnati Reds in August 13th of 1986. But he didn't make his first start until Friday, August 15th of 86. First game of a doubleheader. So 1986, August 15, 1986. How many of the Reds starting lineup can you name from that day?
Well, all right, let's see. Buddy Bell at third base.
Buddy Bell at third, that's one.
Bo Diaz behind the plate.
wrong. That's gonna be catcher's gonna be a tough one.
All right, Steve Christmas or I lose.
Not Steve Christmas, no.
First base, Nick Asaski.
First base, no. A guy that's a lot older. Asaski did come in later in the game in a double switch.
Tony Perez.
I'll say this: Asaski was in the lineup, but
Asaski
not at first
in the
base.
He's in left field then.
Left field. So there you got three.
All right. Was Davis playing center?
He was not, but it's another guy that had a lot of reps in center for those.
Ed Milner.
There you go. That's four.
Ron Oyster at second base.
Wrong. And I'm going to tell you, this is a trick question.
Did Larkin start at second?
Larkin started at second base. So there you go.
Was Concepcion playing shortstop?
He was not, but you'll be able to get it.
Kurt Stillwell?
Kurt Stillwell started at shortstop. Larkin and Stillwell, 1-2 in the lineup that day.
And then the Cobra in right field,
Dave Parker, yes, in right field. So the only one we've got left, I think, is catcher and pitcher. I'll see if you can do pitcher as well. You'll be able to get pitcher if you think about it.
Chris Welsh?
It was not. No, it was a good pitcher.
Cold. Tom Browning?
Chris, I'm so really sorry. Not Tom Browning. One more guess and I'll tell you.
Dennis Rasmussen?
Bill
Gullickson.
Yeah, boy, you're leaning into that good pitcher hint. Mario Soto.
Oh, well, he wasn't a good pitcher in 1986, though.
No, but he was a good pitcher. You're right, yeah. Though. I guess, okay.
I don't know, catcher-wise.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I'll give it to you, unless you want to make another guess.
Terry McGriff.
Sal Butera.
Ooh, Sal.
Sal Butera went 1-for-3 with a walk. Raised his on-base percentage up to .346.
Sally.
Yeah, Larkin won.
Doesn't he have a kid who plays in the major leagues now?
I don't know if he still plays or does not, but he did at some point play. Drew Butera.
That guy must be the greatest defensive player in the history of baseball.
Drew Butera?
He has played 11 years in the major leagues with a .198 batting average.
How's that even possible?
He's a catch-and-throw guy, I guess.
There you go. Pete Rose did pinch hit in that game. Larkin went 1-for-4 with a walk and a run scored. Pete Rose pinch hit. Rob Murphy was the only relief pitcher that day, the lefty Rob Murphy. So, anyway, I don't know. That's always fun to do. So,
like it.
You did pretty well. Before we get into viewer mail, because that's going to be all the discussion about everything's going on. We've got a good group of questions this week. There are a couple things we need to talk about. The Reds made some huge signings this week. First, they signed a pitcher, Cam Bedrosian. Cam Bedrosian, of course, was with the Angels last year, and he's had a pretty good career, honestly. But the Angels outrighted him. He elected free agency, and the Reds signed him to a minor league contract with an invite to big league spring training. If he's healthy, I would not be surprised if he made the team. Cam Bedrosian, you know, his dad won a Cy Young Award, right?
Is that right?
I think he did, didn't he?
I think he
won.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
So, you know, that's good.
Right.
So anyway, minor league contract. Speaking of, the Reds signed outfielder Tyler, how do you pronounce his last name? Do you know this? Tyler
Seguin?
Naquin? I actually know how to pronounce that. He's been around for a while.
Naquin. According to the baseball reference.
There you go.
Naquin. The other one you're wondering about is Don Ossie.
Don Ossie. That's how you pronounce that. Boy, I love getting one of his cards in a baseball card pack when I was 10 years old because I thought it gave me permission to say
that word. Yes, that's like when my kids drive by the fat end of the lake. They like to say a certain word.
Yeah, let's. Your kids, man, they're wild and crazy.
Dad, I'm just talking about
them. I'm just saying.
Talking about Don Ossie.
Tyler Naquin, you know, had a good rookie year. And, yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. He's had some highlights, I guess. But he's, you know, I don't know. I think there's some upside for as opposed to every other minor league contract you sign with an invitation to big league spring training. But, you know, is what it is. So.
He feels like the guy they sign every spring, though, doesn't he?
They sign a guy like that every year.
Every year, like a left-handed hitting outfielder, 29 years old, blah-bitty-blah, was on the top 100 prospect list once.
Those are the guys we're leaning on. We're betting big on those guys.
Betting big on Tyler Naquin having a normal improvement.
Right. All right. So a lot of the topics I wanted to cover are covered in questions from viewer mail. So let's go ahead and dive into viewer mail. These come from our friends at patreon.com/redlegradio, where you too can support the world's most dangerous podcast. First question comes from our friend Mike Perry. Mike Perry says this: I know the Reds don't seem to think that Nick Senzel can play shortstop, but can defensive positioning slash the shift mitigate his apparent weaknesses? This was the reasoning given to us when Moustakas was moved to second base after all. Even if it can't work for short, who would you rather have as your starting shortstop? Kyle Farmer slash Holder, same guy, or Nick Senzel? You want to take this, or do you want me to go ahead and...
Go ahead. Shortstop and Nick Senzel questions are probably not good for me right now.
Yeah, okay, but listen, but how about this? And you're right. My answer to this question for years has been, no, not years, but for a long time has been, you know, the Reds looked at him. There's obviously something they see that they think he can't play there. But Nick Senzel can be the best option on the roster if you literally have no other shortstops on the roster. So I would take Senzel over anybody they've currently got at shortstop.
I mean, you have to see it, right? I mean, you can't.
Yeah, but I've seen Farmer.
I know, but I mean, Farmer's not. I didn't think Farmer was terrible defensively.
Yeah, but he's never going to hit. Never in a million years.
Oh, no, I know. And this is just one of those things, like, I don't know. How far out of position can you play a guy because his bat? Well, here's the question. How good is his bat?
Well, I was going to go there, yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're saying put Joey Votto at shortstop. Joey Votto 2010, well, let's just put him at shortstop because who cares? I mean, you're talking about a guy who hit 186 last year versus the guy who hit, what, 190? I mean,
well, I couldn't
neither one of them hit major league, so.
And that's fair at this point, but.
I correct you. Kyle Farmer hit 70 points higher than Nick Senzel last year. So
what we're saying is Kyle Farmer is a much better offensive player.
I'm not saying the opposite.
Here's what I'm saying.
At this point, I'm not saying the opposite.
Here's what I'm saying. First of all, Kyle Farmer is not a good offensive player. Second of all, I'm betting big on Nick Senzel.
There you go.
Coming back in 2021. I just look at the available options, and I'm like, you know what? He's a good athlete. We know that. Probably can't play shortstop very well. I think that the evidence would indicate that, or else he'd be at shortstop. But I think Mike's point that, you know, the defensive positioning now, that defense is, you know, you can hide weaknesses. Now, can you hide weaknesses at shortstop? That, I don't know if that the answer to that. But the upside on offense is so much higher than Kyle Farmer or Kyle Holder or Kyle whoever we have.
Kyle Holder's really a guy.
He's evidently a guy. He's actually,
I thought that was like placeholder or something.
Well, he would literally be a placeholder. The thing about Holder is he's the only one that I think we can be sure he actually can play the position defensively. I mean, Jose Garcia can, but, you know, nobody
is a full year older than Nick Senzel.
Who is?
Kyle Holder.
So he does exist.
Yeah. Says he's a real guy.
So I would go with Senzel, but the only situation under which I would have said, let's go with Senzel, is a situation that we have now, which is the Reds do not have another, literally don't have a shortstop on the roster. I mean, we're pretending that Kyle Farmer is a shortstop. I mean, nobody has ever thought of Kyle Farmer as a major league caliber shortstop ever in the history of his life. And he's made it to the big leagues. He's had a great, you know, great baseball career all the way up. And nobody's ever said, boy, that guy's a big league shortstop. And he's going to be handed the keys to the castle. Snoopaloop, which is a good name, asks this question. If Alfredo Rodriguez is the answer, what is the question? Dark horse for the starting shortstop in 2021, the biggest waste of $6 million in Cincinnati Reds history, which would be saying something, or other. Alfredo Rodriguez, the Reds signed him internationally. And the knock on him when they signed him was that he, you know, great glove, can't hit. And as it turns out, pretty good glove. Yeah, he can't hit.
So. He's not the biggest waste of $6 million ever because Eric Milton played for the Reds.
And I got to give kudos to Joe Farsing, who actually commented that below that question at our Patreon page.
No, that guy, that was a waste of money. I think I stumbled across a picture the other day of like him trying out and standing around walk jockety or something. And I was just like, oh, I forgot about that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. They were betting big on Eric Milton coming back.
No, not Milton. I'm talking about Rodriguez.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just saw a picture of him. Like what? It must've been a story when they signed him. That's brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah. I don't know. When you sign a guy, they're like, well, there's going to be questions with his bat. First of all, it's a problem. I don't know that we're in a day and age when you can just have a defense first short or defense only shortstop, I should say.
Yeah, he's like 4 days older than Nick Senzel.
Is that right? And yet you still don't want to give the job to Senzel.
Reds have done really a fine job with those guys from more 1994.
They really have. Joey Gaditza says, hey, guys, hope you're both well with spring training and an expected full regular season. Oh, actually, let me go back to that last question, which was, if Alfredo Rodriguez is the starting shortstop in 2021, something has gone horribly wrong. But that thing's already gone horribly wrong. So Joey says, hey, guys, hope you're well with spring training and an expected full regular season. Any chance we see the DH implemented from now until the season starts? Doesn't it seem kind of risky having pitchers hit after they're just back into a regular routine after quite some time? More of a risk of injury, maybe.
I don't think those guys put up enough effort to get injured batting.
Yeah, really. No, I don't. I don't think so. I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to see the DH at some point. It's not going to be this year, but I don't know that it's any more risky than anything else pitchers do. I think probably throwing overhand with your dominant arm is an inherently risky, you know, behavior anyway. And so, I don't know that it's that much more of a risk of injury. So I know I don't see that happening.
Nah, I don't, they're not going to change the rules at this point. I mean, teams have their rosters. I mean, most teams have filled out their rosters with at least one player at every position.
I think 29 teams have at least one player at every position.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's staggering to me.
We keep talking about this and I don't want to keep dwelling on it, but I mean, actually, I never thought I'd see the time when a professional sports franchise just made the decision that it's just a little too much money for us to have somebody at every position.
You know what it's like? It's like in Hoosiers when Coach Norman Dale tells the referee, my team is on the floor. My team is on the floor.
Opening day.
And they just play with four guys the rest of the game.
Opening day. David Bell walks out to hand his lineup.
Like, who's your ninth guy?
He's like, yeah, you only got eight guys on this. My team is on the field.
And one of them's Ollie.
One of them's got to be Ollie. Oh, he made those free throws. Classic movie. All right, Hooper Pal asks this question. How many of these players do you see on the roster after the trade deadline? Actually calls it the trade line, which I like that.
I like that better.
I do too. Yeah. After the trade line, if the Reds are out of it. Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo, Mike Moustakas, Slick Nick, Gino, or the Wink? I think Castillo's still here. I think Sonny Gray's probably still here. They won't be able to find anybody to take Moustakas at that price. I could see him trading Castellanos to somebody that needs an outfielder. I don't know. I feel like Gino's going to be here. I don't know.
I think any one of them who can go will... is in danger of being gone. I just don't think there's any, any market for most of them. It all depends. I mean, I don't know, you know, this off season, everything was so goofy, you know, with salaries and free agency and all that stuff. So who knows?
Yeah. It's never been more difficult to, kind of forecast that. I think those guys could go. I think if Sonny Gray or Luis Castillo go at the trade line, which is what we're going to start calling it now, I think that's when we start to get nervous. Because
I agree with that.
You know, Castillo's the guy they should be throwing money at to keep him around. Not Tatis money, but that's the one of those guys you should be throwing money at. Hooper also says, bonus question, over under, Jose Garcia batting average 225. If Jose Garcia plays in the big leagues this year for a full season, you going with the under?
Under. Unless there's like a rule change or some other like extraneous thing, I think Jose Garcia will be at least 25 points under the league average for batting average.
So what type of rule change are you talking about? If you foul the ball off twice, it counts as a hit?
Yeah, you know, the batter gets to call where he wants the pitch to be thrown, ball size increased to like 10 inches diameter, other teams deciding to play without a shortstop, things like that.
You know, I'm going to ask you a question here that our mutual acquaintance Bill Lacka and I have discussed. Bill is a low man on Jose Garcia. He doesn't see anything in his history that makes him think he's going to be a legit big league player. Where are you on Jose Garcia?
Yeah, I don't know, closer to Bill than the Reds are.
I don't know. I think Garcia, I think Garcia played exceptionally well in a difficult league, but it was a high league, the Florida State League. He was completely overmatched last year. Clearly needs more minor league time. But he's good enough defensively that if what we saw in that one, and maybe I'm squinting too hard to see a guy, but I do think I see a guy that can be an average big league shortstop. And there's some value in an average big league shortstop because we don't have a shortstop.
True.
John Majewski asks, and this may shoot some holes in what you were saying earlier about some of the things you heard Barry Larkin say. John asks, Barry Larkin says, quote, I truly think D. Gordon could play shortstop at the big league level and be a very good shortstop at the big league level. End quote. This comment is so revealing on many different levels. What do you make of it? Chris, what do you make of that quote?
I'm pretty sure. I think D. Gordon and Barry, like, they work out in the offseason together.
Yes, and have for years.
I think that's all it is. It's his buddy.
Yeah. Goes back to our conversation about what David Bell said and what Nick Kroll said. What's he going to say? It's his friend, you know. There is zero chance, I think I would say. Zero, although David Bell says he's going to get a shot at shortstop. I think there's zero chance D. Gordon can play shortstop at the big league level anymore. Oh, boy. Why can't people just tell the truth?
Well, you know, there's not a lot of incentives in that.
That's true. Rich Thompson. Gentlemen. What was your first memory as a Reds fan? And then he adds, how's this for a short and pithy question? Rich has a tendency to ask longer, really involved questions. And I was like, I love them. Sometimes they're very entertaining to discuss, but, you know, we got a bunch of questions. Keep it short and pithy. What's your first memory as a Reds fan, Chris?
I think my first vivid memory is the Pete Rose hitting streak. And I'll keep it pithy. I'm not going to go into that. If you want to read that story, you can. You can buy the book, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. I believe it's in a footnote in there somewhere.
It's actually my favorite story in that book. I have read the book.
So it's in there. But yeah, I was five and a big Reds fan, big Pete Rose fan, and was very upset when Pete's hitting streak was ended.
Yeah, yeah. Go look it up, who the pitcher was that ultimately ended Rose's 44-game hitting streak. By the way, I have read The Big 50. I think most of our viewers here have read The Big 50. I do want to call out Joe Farsing, who revealed in our Slack channel today that he doesn't even own a copy. I mean, really?
I mean, I appreciate the Patreon, all the Patreons. But he could have saved up a few of those bucks and bought the daggone book.
Or just not say that out loud. Just let me think that you
know. Yeah, but the public library.
True. Go to the public library. It's in every public library in America. That may not be true.
Oh.
It's in some public libraries. We do know this. All right, this next question from Jerry Sadoth seems like this is aimed at you. Question is this. Is Kyle Farmer cromulent enough to embiggen himself at shortstop?
That's more of a Shelbyville shortstop. Wouldn't be interested in it.
Excellent Simpsons reference there, Jerry. Jeff Uechler. I recently responded with a benign reference to Chad in a tweet thread from Doug Gray. Doug Gray is the worst, by the way. Don't ever mention him on this podcast again. I recently responded with a benign reference to Chad in a tweet thread from Doug Gray. My response was immediately liked, and I was followed by, quote, a beautiful, young, and lonely girl eager to meet new people, end quote. It's maybe the best viewer mail question ever. She invited me to follow her on Twitter to enjoy her sexy photos. Is this indicative of what even the slightest reference to Chad Dotson results in? And why don't you mention this in the Patreon description?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, that's very much indicative.
It's been my experience.
Yeah, yeah. Most girls that I've been in contact with prefer to stay lonely. But your mileage may vary on that. Oh, man. Fantastic question, Jeff. Thank you. Charles Zollers. Hey, Chad, I was bored during my work break yesterday and decided to scroll down and listen to your 2015 season preview. Okay, first, my guy Charles here went back in the archives and listened to the 2015 season preview on the podcast. That's dedication.
I have a feeling we were not, one of us was skeptical at that point.
You think so?
I'm sure there's a podcast where you and like Jason try to talk each other into things being okay. You're like, Ludwig could come back and
yeah, I think that that's kind of where he went with this one. Charles says
we were pretty ticked though. We were pretty ticked at that point, right? I mean, that 2014 was a disappointing season, and then like they did nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they, kind of pretended like we're in 2014, we're going to compete.
Right. But they didn't do anything to improve the 2013 team.
Right. And then they got rid of some people. Charles finishes up by saying, I listened to your 2015 season preview, and boy, does it sound similar to this season, except you were more optimistic back then. That makes me kind of sad, actually.
Well, that's the offseason they traded away Leitos Simon, and they got Discofani and Suarez.
Yeah, yeah.
And signed Jason Marquis.
Oh, man.
Kevin Gregg, Burke Badenhop, Paul Mahalem.
Oh, man, Burke Badenhop. Well, never stop loving that guy. He's Inner Circle Hall of Fame All-Reds name team, right? Don't you think, Burke Badenhop?
I love it.
Who else is in that? Can you think of me off the top of your head that's in that all-name team?
Steve Christmas.
Steve Christmas is there. Absolutely. Paul Householder.
Kyle Waldrop.
Kyle Waldrop. Okay. I'm with it.
John Kootlangus.
Oh, he's like MVP. He's Inner Circle. John Kootlangus.
The same season they had Badenhop, they also had Brennan Bosch.
Oh. That's a good one.
I think it's Bosch.
Yeah. Can I say this? We've had a fun little ride with this podcast and, the book and the website and all that stuff, but the highlight of my fandom, Reds fandom, was the day that John Kootlangus followed me on Twitter. I'm still proud of that.
He's a good sport.
All right, so Charles finishes up by saying, hoping guys stay healthy and everything has to go perfectly right. Also, I would like a comment on the 2017 College Football National Champs hiring Gus Malzahn. Charles is a UCF guy. You know what UCF is? It's a college, evidently.
Is that that dunking college?
No, that was... Hey, you got to mention that man, by the way. That was Florida Gulf Coast. And they beat Georgetown.
Another one that beat Georgetown early.
Charles likes to pretend that Central Florida won the national championship in 2017.
Oh, was that one of those?
Okay. Yeah. So they hired Auburn's old coach, I guess. And, come on. You're taking the leftovers from Auburn and you're trying to claim you're a college football powerhouse. Come on, Charles. Get out of here. You can't be as good as, for example, Virginia, coached by all Hall of Fame name team Bronco Mendenhall. They won at least five games this year, yeah. I think.
Although, ex-Auburn coaches go on to strange and successful things.
Is there anything in particular you're referencing there?
They go on to coach at UC.
There you go. That's true. And do other things after that.
Other things after that. Engage in colorful exploits.
Yeah. Why didn't you hire an Alabama coach, Charles? Like, what's his name? Who's the Alabama guy? You know what I'm thinking of.
Nick Saban?
No, before him.
Bear Bryant?
No, he was good. Who between those two?
George Welsh?
No. Oh, wait, slow your roll, Chief.
Al Groh?
First of all, George Welsh is a Hall of Fame. He's literally in the College Football Hall of Fame. So I'm not going to listen to you slander him. Al Groh is garbage. We've turned into a UVA football podcast. I was always afraid that was going to happen at some point.
It's always all roads kind of trend there.
Yeah, we've been on the edge.
The arc of history tends towards that.
All right. Kyle Kapler. Kyle says, on Monday, August 22nd, 2016, the Reds lost to the Dodgers 18-19. Thank you for that comment, Kyle. Oh, no, there's more. 18-9. They lost 18-9. The players who pitched for the Reds on that memorable night were Homer Bailey, Josh Smith, Jumbo Diaz, Blake Wood, who evidently exists, Michael Lorenzen, and Tyler Holt. Oh, I know the answer to this. Out of the players, and without looking at the box score, who would you have guessed did not give up an earned run in that massacre? I know the answer to that because I remember that.
Homer Bailey.
It's Tyler Holt, who was
is he a position player?
Yeah. He's one of these famous obscure Reds that I like to talk about all the time. Yeah. I know he's the one, and I haven't looked, but he did not. Tyler Holt, because every time I saw him, I thought about what's that
Steve
show?
Holt.
Steve Holt. What is that show?
Arrested Development.
Yeah, there's always money in the banana stand. Steve Holt. He was my favorite. I wanted him to be a Red forever.
I always mix him and Sam Fold up. I don't know why. I guess they both have like short names.
I like short names. Can I speak for just a moment about obscure Reds?
Take as much time as you need.
Well, I don't have that much time. But that was my, I do this little newsletter thing for some reason. I don't have enough free time, I guess. I wanted to.
Like a zine?
Yeah, it's a zine. Boy, what is this? 1998 all of a sudden? And I wrote this week about chaddotson.substack.com, whatever. There's a blatant ad there. And I wrote about obscure former Reds. And one that I had was Kerry Robinson. I was looking at the 1999 team. That was, we had fun with that team, right?
Yep.
Did you remember that Jason Beret started 10 games for that team?
I did not remember that.
6.85 ERA. Kerry Robinson. You probably remember. Go ahead.
Well, I remember Kerry Robinson as a Padre when I had season tickets to the Padres in the early 2000s.
Oh, there you go. Don't you wish you had season tickets for the Padres now?
Oh, man, for multiple reasons. That means I would be living there.
Yeah.
And two, I get to see cool baseball players and a team that wants to win.
A team that wants to win. It's amazing. Kerry Robinson also had a few years there with the Cardinals, whatever. But he played in 9 games for that 1999 Reds team. And what I thought was interesting was he had 1 plate appearance in those 9 games. He played 9 games, had 1 plate appearance. But he scored 4 runs. It's hard to do.
Jack McKeon, huh? PR and all over the place.
Yeah, Jack McKeon loved a pinch run. Who else? The other one that I wanted to mention was Willie Bloomquist. I love the Willie Bloomquist story, which should be a Lifetime movie at some point.
Well, I think I may have mentioned this on Twitter somewhere, but my recollection is of Willie Bloomquist is that somebody, some beat writer or whatever, Jim Bay or somebody, trying to convince Red fans that Willie Bloomquist was like the second fastest guy on that team.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah, he's the fastest guy, or the second fastest, behind obviously Billy, right?
I actually really wasn't on that team. I wasn't up yet. This is 2010. So I'm partly misremembering it. Or he was second fastest to Chris Heisey.
Chris Heisey. You're going in and out a little bit, Chris, but we'll power through it here. Willie Bloomquist was 32 years old that year. The Reds purchased him from the Royals in mid-September. The Reds just tossed a couple bucks their way, and they said, you can have him. 17 at-bats, he was fine, whatever, I don't know. But what I love is that 2 weeks after he was acquired, he got to celebrate Clinchmas with the Reds and with a bunch of guys he basically didn't know. So good for him. If you heard a few weeks ago when we had Mo Egger on the podcast, they tried to sign or tried to get together with Bloomquist to give some postseason commentary. He didn't know any of the players. What I loved about Bloomquist, he played until he was 37, 14 years in the big leagues, and 1.7 wins above replacement. That's how do you get a 14-year career? It's kind of like you were talking about earlier with Butera.
You just got to be a little. I mean, part of it is like, if you do one thing really well, then you can keep doing it. But I don't know. I mean, above replacement is above replacement, right?
Oh, that's true. Actually, it's an excellent point. He was not a replace. He wasn't quite below replacement, so nobody replaced him.
Yeah, right. There you go.
All right, Tyler Holt. Thomas Dennis asks, oh, come on, Thomas. I was in the middle of my workday when Bruce Springsteen could be heard playing in the background. I thought, that reminds me of Chad Dotson. That really irritates me. What sort of mental anguish does it give you to know that quite a number of Reds fans think of you when Springsteen is played? The most overrated, he's not bad, but he's the most overrated musical artist of the last, say, 1,000 years.
I'm sorry. I you were cutting out a little bit. He's asked you about Dave Matthews.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Was that right, what I heard?
Yeah. It does. Listen, I will concede that it takes some chutzpah for a Dave Matthews fan to say that Bruce Springsteen is overrated. I'm not gonna argue that point.
I'm not a fan of either one of them, really. So I'm just here for the memes.
I think Dave Matthews is properly rated. A lot of people really hate him, and a lot of people really love him.
Yeah, he's just got a really big standard deviation.
Yes. So, Thomas, you hurt my feelings. Bruce Springsteen, he likes Jeeps.
Yeah, he does. I'm sure he rides and motorcycles.
Evidently, some motorcycles as well. Do you use the term motorcycles in your everyday life?
I've heard about 10, but not since Chips went off the air.
Oh, Chips. Punch and John.
Freeze frames.
Risto Neely asks, good evening, Professor Dotson and Mr. Garber. He actually says Mount Garber. I assume he means Mr. Garber, but I'm going to go with Mount Garber.
That's not cool, dude. Pandemic's been rough on all of us. Bring that into it.
Come on, Risto. Last week when Doug Gray was the guest on the podcast, I was accused of waving a false flag operation because I referred to myself as being no spring chicken. I felt this was an accurate description of myself due to my advanced age in comparison to Mr. Gray, who, being a millennial, must be at least 30 years younger than myself, which, by the way, I'm 69 years old. Risto, our oldest patron, and love having him as part of the family. Anyway, the question at hand is, am I actually no spring chicken, and was I falsely accused of waving a false flag? In both of your valued opinions, were these true or false statements, and was I falsely accused? He's really upset about being falsely accused.
He really is. I'd like to exonerate him.
We need to exonerate
him. I can't follow all the negative and double negatives in that true and false question, but I believe in Risto, and Doug Gray is the worst. So,
yeah, if we're comparing Risto to Doug, I mean, there's no question here, right? Yeah, Risto, you win this one. Risto, if it makes you feel better, you're no spring chicken. I'm not sure what that conversation was.
That's what he wants you to say, right?
Yeah, I think so. Love you, Risto. Chuck Nichols asks, what's up, guys? Which one of you will make it out to Goodyear for spring training games? And he has a second question. But first, let's answer that one. You're not going to Goodyear, I bet.
Not going to Goodyear.
Have you ever been to Goodyear?
I was in Goodyear in 2010. We were just discussing this tonight at dinner.
Oh, I know about that, yes. I'm not going this year either, but here's where I've fallen as a Super Reds fan, is that I've never been to Red spring training. Does that disappoint you?
It surprises me.
Yeah.
I think I went to a quick visit in 1994, I believe.
Yeah.
And Plant City.
Oh, Plant City. A lot of plants.
Strawberry plants.
Ooh, interesting.
And then Goodyear in 2010.
Why were you in Goodyear in 2010? Any particular reason, just to go watch spring training games?
Yeah. I think we just decided to check it out. My wife and I, we only had one kid then, so we just did it. And, I think we only went to one game, I think. No, we went to a Giants game down in Scottsdale too.
But. Yeah. It's been on my, I don't know that it's on my bucket list. I don't really have a bucket list. I don't know that's really something that I desperately need to do, but I really want to do it at some point, and I may do it next year. I don't know. This year, I'm really, I hate to say this, but I'm really kind of going to enforce a rule of, if Bob Castellini won't spend money on the Reds, neither will I. That seems fair to me.
That seems like a deal.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna boycott this year.
And the calendar, the last couple of years, the calendar has really been difficult because, you know, my kids have a spring break that's been like the last week of March. And for, I think this will be the third year in a row, like the Reds are more or less playing in Cincinnati by the time we would get to spring break. So,
yeah.
Taking two trips.
I will say this, that I have for many years, I've got to do it before I get too old, but I really want to do the fantasy camp thing, which is, I don't know, maybe it's kind of lame. I don't know if it is or not.
I was just looking at it before we got on the line here because they postponed it officially till next year. So I was once again doing that thing where it's either, I always just look at it when it's either too late or too early.
Yeah.
Like they really need to, I don't know, maybe they don't need to do any teams. I think they sell it out every year, but it would help me if they would do some marketing of that thing, like right around the time you're supposed to sign up for it.
They need to do it like in November, so I can tell my wife, "Hey, give me that for Christmas."
Yeah, yeah, it's it ain't cheap. I think it's $4,800.
Yeah, that's
so you got to get there, and I think that covers your living expenses. I think.
Yeah, I think it's everything. Yeah, while you're there, other than I guess transportation.
How many of these, you know, former Reds are going to put one in our ear hole, though, for talking trash in this podcast?
I know, right? Danny Gray's is going to put me in the dirt.
Jason Marquis is probably one of the main guys.
Yeah, but if Adam Dunn's there, we're double fisting Bud Lights all night.
Oh, quadruple fisting.
Quadruple fisting, exactly. Chris, we need to kind of make a pact here live on the podcast, even though nobody that's listening to this is hearing it live, but that next year we're going to do everything we can to do fantasy camp and report back how it our experiences.
I'm supportive of that. I need to I think I got a plan for this.
Well, I would love to do it, and I don't know, I think it'd be fun. I need to do it before I can't do it anymore, and hey, I'm literally in the best shape of my life, so there you go. Chuck's second question was also, who would win in a hot dog eating contest, Chad, Chris, Doug, or Jason? Who wins a hot dog eating contest?
I don't know. I don't know. In my day, I don't like hot dogs. So it would definitely be kind of a Kobayashi situation where I'm just throwing them down without tasting them. I'm not a massive hot dog fan, but
I do like hot dogs. I would probably bet on myself, but if you ever
cheese coney contest, I might do okay.
Ooh, there you go. Have you watched one of these Kobayashi hot dog eating contests? Have you watched? And it's the most disgusting thing.
I never really watched the thing. You know, it's like you see it's coming on, you see a couple seconds of it, and you've kind of got the idea.
Oh, they like dip it in water and
water.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't want to do that.
My kid entered a cream puff eating contest once at an Oktoberfest. But it was like he was probably 6 or 7, and it was an adult cream puff eating contest.
And he won. That's amazing.
Well, they did give him a T-shirt because they felt bad, I think, that taking a prize from a little kid. So he's had this Oktoberfest T-shirt that he wears as pajamas, and it's slowly inching its way up as he grows. You know, it used to be like down to his ankles, and now it more or less fits him.
Well, it's terribly exciting. All right, a couple more here, and then we'll call her quits. Nathan Connor, another spring training question. Being a Florida resident, spring training means a lot to me. But since the Reds moved to Arizona, it's not the same. I know the players like the short commutes in Arizona, but what about the fans? Aren't there more Ohioans living in Florida? Wouldn't current residents prefer a March trip to the beach over a cross-country flight to the desert? This move is yet another black mark on Bob Castellini's custodianship. Yeah, added to the list. Yes, Chad, I'm selfish. Is there any chance the Reds would ever move back to where God intended Red spring training to take place? Florida! Exclamation point. The answer is no, not in the near future.
I think they own the place they're in?
Owner.
Probably not. Probably some team gave it to them, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're pretty tied to it, I think.
Yeah, it's not going to happen anytime soon. I don't know. I like Florida. but I don't see it happen. There probably are more
both, but
Go ahead.
I'm kind of sold on the desert, truthfully. The thing about Florida is it rains a lot. And so the players get their workouts rained out. They get the games rained out. You try to go to a game, it gets rained out. You know, they don't have much of that out in they'll have a week of cold weather here in February in Phoenix, but they don't get rained out there. And it's usually decent enough. So.
Yeah, I mean, so from the Reds' perspective, it makes a lot of sense. But, you know, from the fans' perspective, and let's be clear, the Reds don't care about you. But, you know, I would rather go to Florida and hang out in March than go to Arizona. Although, you know, I don't have anything against Arizona. I'd like to go to Arizona as well. But I don't know. I like Florida. I would prefer to go there over Arizona, but I don't see it happening. But if we're gonna grade it as a black mark on Bob Castellini's custodianship, I'm all for that. Anything to do to criticize Bob Castellini, who is the biggest problem with the Cincinnati Reds, and no one is even close in second place. So yeah. Anyway, David Katzenmeyer. That's a good name, by the way. Is that an Inner Circle Hall of Fame Patreon name?
Sure.
Sure. Why not? Hey guys, I saw an interesting video today talking about ditching the luxury tax and imposing a salary cap and salary floor. In this scenario, it allows for more teams to spend more money and puts owners in a position where if they can't support it, sell the team to someone who can. In this scenario, we'd see a salary floor of $140 million and a cap of $210 million. I don't think this would ever happen, but I thought it was interesting. I wanted to see what you guys thought. And then he's got a second question, but we'll get to that in a second. But what do you think about salary cap and salary floor? To me, it lets Bob Castellini off the hook for being a jerk.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about those kind of things enough. I think you need to make sure it can't just be an arbitrary number. It's got to be like a set amount of revenue goes to the players every year, no matter what. You know, whatever that number is, they got to agree on it. So it can't just be, you know, 140 and 220 or whatever those numbers are. It's got to be that goes up every year, and the numbers has to be real revenue, and which can't hide the revenue and all those kinds of things. So I don't know. I don't think that's a problem with baseball, and I never really like you get, you know, do we like the NBA? Like the structure and the salaries and the capology and this trade for that contract and all that kind of stuff. I don't enjoy that part of that sport.
Yeah. You know, you're trading for the rights to Ricky Sanchez to, you know, get an expiring contract. It's just, I hate
sign
that stuff.
And trade and a mid-level veteran exemption for Thursdays. And I don't know. I mean,
It probably makes the Reds, it forces the Reds to be a little more competitive, maybe.
What they need to do is make there be more incentives to winning baseball games. If you lose a bunch of money if you don't ever win baseball games, then teams will try much harder to win baseball games. And the best way to win baseball games is to have better baseball players. So however they need to do that, they'll do it. But as it is, I'll say it this way. I think the Reds are a somewhat unique situation in that their problem is not motivation. It's competence and meddling.
Bob Castellini?
I think Castellini wants to win. I think he gets in his own way.
Yeah. A corollary there is, since you mentioned the NBA, if baseball ultimately expands the playoffs, the Reds will never, at least while Castellini's here, never have a payroll that's in the top half of baseball.
Correct.
And of course, that's not really saying much because they're still not doing it.
They have to buy the $1 lottery ticket and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Bet big, right?
Bet big.
Bet big on the offense coming back. His second question is this. Secondly, this is David Katzenmeyer again. Secondly, and more importantly, does a straw have one or two holes? Is this controversial?
I never thought about it. I'd rather talk about what a dog looks like wearing pants.
What does a dog look like wearing pants?
Well, if a dog wore pants, how would he wear pants?
A straw has two holes, right?
I think so. I don't know. I'm going to be up all night tonight.
Oh, crap, about
this. I'm not ready to answer.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
I'll be back in 3 weeks to answer.
Oh, David. David is no longer Inner Circle Hall of Fame. All right. I think that's about enough for tonight. There's one last thing that I did want to mention before we cut it close. Fangraphs had their playoff odds, and they had the Reds at 19% to make the playoffs. Does that seem like a high number to you?
Well, how many teams are in the division?
There are five teams in the division.
So they've got a little bit less than a random chance of winning the playoffs. Okay.
Yeah, the Reds have
making the playoffs. Of course, they have wild cards. So,
yeah, they project the Reds at fourth place, though 78 and 84. 78 seems to be the win number that a lot of these projections are coalescing around. So, 19%. Yeah, they got a chance. They really. That's what I said on Twitter, which is because I'm short and pithy on Twitter. the Reds are. My prediction is the Reds are not going to make the playoffs, but they might.
There you go. There you go.
I guess.
Hey, I do have one more bit of factuary here to add before we leave.
Let's hear it.
Willie Bluequist update. You are correct that he had 1.7 WAR in his entire career. He had 0.7 WAR in his first 12 games in the major leagues at age 24.
Oh, and I love it.
He somehow went 15 for his first 33 with four doubles and five walks, had an 1100 OPS first couple weeks in the bigs, and then
one WAR for the next 14 seasons.
Yeah, I mean he had a 0.6 in his second year, and then so he you know 0.4 over the next 12 years.
Man, it's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for him. All right, Chris, any final thoughts?
No, stay warm, everybody.
Stay warm, stay safe. This is the Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast, the world's most dangerous podcast. We're on wherever you find podcasts, we're there. Just go look for us. If it's a place that allows you to leave reviews, leave us a 5-star review. None of this less than 5-star nonsense, okay? As we always say, if you like us, talk about us. If you don't like us, just shut up, okay? You don't have to tell that. And also, how did you listen to this whole podcast if you don't like us? Come on. Chris, my man, always a good time.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
For Chris Garber and Willie Bluequist, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.